Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd her career get there?
This is a podcast with Lauren Ascari.
This is the Lauren Ascari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And my guest today is Gina Dubé. Did I get that right? Perfect. And she is the managing director of Greenhouse Wellness. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thrilled to have you here. I'm so excited for this, to learn about your background and then obviously get into to the cannabis industry. So let's start out talking about Greenhouse Wellness. Can you give just kind of a quick overview about what that business is?
Greenhouse Wellness is a cannabis dispensary in Ellicott City, Maryland. Our focus is a little bit different than other dispensaries in that we really focus on the medical aspects of cannabis. We're staffed with nurses, clinicians, fitness professionals, and our goal is to make cannabis accessible. That being said, we have a little non-traditional clientele. Most of our patients are 60 and older.
Interesting. We're going to come back to that. Let's go backwards. Tell us a little bit about you. Where did you grow up? Only child? Did you have siblings? What were you like as a kid?
I grew up in Fairmont, West Virginia, a coal mining town in the center of West Virginia. Great place to grow up. Very rural, not technology astute, but filled with people with kindness and values. And so it was great. I was one of two children of Italian immigrants. And my brother is a practicing attorney in New York. So.
And is your brother's older than you or younger than you?
2 years younger.
2 years younger. So you're the big sis.
Yep.
So what was it like growing up in West Virginia, and especially with immigrant parents? Like, they came when they were how old, and what was their adjustment here?
You know, both sets of grandparents came from Italy. My parents were born here, but born in a very traditional Italian setting. So my background was a little different. My parents didn't believe that females should go to school. They didn't believe that females needed to go to college. I would marry an ice coal miner and stay in West Virginia the rest of my life. And, you know, for me, high school was like, you don't need math, you need shorthand because you're going to be a secretary somewhere, which is an admirable career and aspirational path, but it just wasn't the path for me.
And do you remember, as you were growing up, at what age you kind of thought, or what the moment was when you thought, that's probably not going to be my life, that's not my style?
I think it was forever, to be honest. I mean, it was very confining of the daughter of an Italian male. And your expectation was you were in the kitchen, you were cooking, you were going to raise babies. And again, fine and wonderful aspirations. They just weren't for me. I wanted something a little beyond West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you know when you were a little girl, like, what you wanted to be as you grew up?
No, and I started West Virginia University mainly on scholarships because my parents wouldn't provide educational funds and couldn't, in truth. They were not well off by any means. But I started as an interior design major, lasted 3 days, and switched to engineering and never looked back. Love being an engineer.
Interesting. What type of engineering did you study?
I have a bachelor's in industrial engineering and computer science and a master's in electrical engineering and computer science. So I'm a geek.
And so where does that take you? So you graduate college with those degrees, and then you go where?
I got married at 20. To a gentleman I'm still married to nearly 40 years later.
Congrats.
He moved here to the DC region so we both could get a job. He was an engineer also, or is an engineer also. And I started my first career at Earring Research in Annapolis as a practicing engineer. And from there, I kind of moved into the dark side of sales and had a ball with it. So I went to Trusted Information Systems, took a company public. I've run a venture fund. And then I started a small company here in Columbia called TheraPearl selling ice packs, which kind of went wild, and we sold that to BioFreeze. And, you know, I did that so my children would learn the entrepreneurial process. So they packed the bags in the basement, and then we grew out of the basement. We got a warehouse, and then we grew out of the warehouse. And so it was a great experience. We sold to Performance Health, who owns BioFreeze, and I retired. So my partner, Dr. Apgar, approached me because someone had approached her to invest in cannabis. And I remember we were on a call and doing as most mothers do. We had just played tennis and we're doing this call on the way home from tennis, trying to do two things at once, right? Because there's always too much to do with kids. And the gentleman said, I said, what's the return profile of this opportunity? And the gentleman said, oh, honey, you wouldn't understand the math. I was like, no, I think I'll understand the math.
Just and this is time frame is how many years ago-ish are we talking?
3 years ago.
Okay.
And he said, no, you will never get the math. I'm not even going to waste my time. So we hung up and I called Leslie back and I said, we are not bidding with him. We're going to bid this ourselves. And so we had 10 days to write the proposal, which we did and submitted and ultimately won. So we're very delighted to be here.
I love all that. I have a couple of follow-up questions throughout because that, sure, that story is fantastic and I want to make sure we capture it all. So for the business, so you left Arinc, went to another company. What prompted you to then take the leap from working for somebody else to start your own business the first time?
You know, running a venture fund was the best thing I ever did. It allowed me to take the engineering background with some practical entrepreneurial skills and watch other companies develop and grow. And so I started TheraPearl kind of at the end of the venture fund to show my children the entrepreneurial process. And it was fabulous. We'd get up in the morning, we'd have a purchase order for $12 or $15 or whatever it was. And they really learned, and I love it. I love growing things. I call myself a farmer because I like growing little businesses.
How do you go from engineering to running a venture fund?
You know, it's not hard. You surround yourself with really smart accounting professionals. But most of running a venture fund is examining opportunities for viability. And being an engineer, it's just a very logical thought process on how you do that. Is it technically viable? Is it financially viable? Is there a niche for it in the market? But it is just fascinating to watch. And you're surrounded with really bright entrepreneurial people who see life in a different way. There are no boundaries, right? And there's some genius in that and some courage that I don't know that I possess because they will run with scissors. So it's just been a wonderful environment to meet people, to learn things.
And so now let's fast forward to Greenhouse Wellness. So you decide, like, take us through again that of like cannabis is something that we should do. Like, where does that even start?
Well, it started in defiance to this gentleman who told us we wouldn't understand the math. That is 100% truthful. I encourage all women to think outside the box and do things outside their comfort zone. And in truth, I had held a security clearance for 20 years. I had sold into the federal government. And so I had never tried cannabis. It was not something in my wheelhouse. And to write the proposal, I downloaded 5 books from Amazon. What is cannabis? So it's running a business like any other businesses. And what you'll see in Maryland is many fail because they look at it as some interesting opportunity as opposed to this is a business. And we have approached it from the beginning as we are a business. We're going to service our customers in the best way possible. And Dr. Apgar really focuses on the medical aspects of it. So we're a little different. From this business, we have spun off Placeba, which is a line of women's products, which Dr. Apgar and I designed. And that company is up and functional. And then we also wrote a book called High Heels, H-E-A-L-S, and to talk about our journey and what we've learned. Kind of as a love letter to women, an encouragement to say, you can do it too. We're no smarter. We're no brighter. It's just you keep your head down and running against that wall, and eventually you'll break through.
And what has, I don't think it's any secret to anyone that the cannabis industry has had, I'll call them challenges. You might use another word. But with, let's call it widespread social acceptance, mm-hmm. I'll say. Can you talk a little bit about some of those as they pertain to your business and either what you've overcome or what you haven't and what you see kind of the challenges for the industry as a whole?
Well, it's interesting. It is not diverse in any sense. We are one of 2 or 3 women-owned businesses in the industry out of 150. So you have a diversity challenge from the beginning. There's a financial challenge in that, like, for example, I banked with the same community bank for 35 years. When they saw my name on a license, they wanted to cancel my mortgage, cancel my loans, cancel my accounts. They invited me to leave the bank. And my pushback was, when you invite all the men that are in this industry to leave the bank, I'll leave too. Until then, I'm not. And I'm still in that bank, though I'm not happy with it. But there is a stigma to cannabis. And I've lost friends. I have lost people who have been friends for 30 years. And I say, can't we agree to disagree? And there's a hard line there. But at the same point, this is probably the most rewarding thing I've ever done, because we see people off of their opioids. We see people cancer-free or living with cancer in a way that they can manage their own life. We cheer at those who get better. We cry at the funerals for those we lose. And cancer inevitably wins. So it has been a wonderful experience, much more difficult than I ever imagined. Very regulatory, very constrained, and hard, and very hard.
As you're going along through the journey, would you have predicted, or can you still predict at some level where things might go or might evolve? When you look at different parts of the country and what states are accepting versus the federal level, if you were making a prediction today for what your business or industry looks like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what do you see?
Do you remember when the internet came about and we had the dot-com boom? We're now in the middle of the green rush. And I think that within the next 2 years, we're going to see nationwide acceptance of cannabis. Right now, we have somewhere between 33 and 36 of the states and territories that are either have a medical program or a recreational program. So the tide has tipped. Unfortunately, the federal government has late to the party. We need to change the sentencing rules for cannabis. We also need to change, really predominantly, the research rules, because we talk anecdotally about cannabis as opposed to having FDA studies, which we can't have right now because it's federally illegal. So I think the first thing to do is declassify cannabis to Schedule 2 or 3 instead of a Schedule 1 drug, which means no medical use at all, which is interesting to me that cannabis is up there, but to really do the studies. And so we can talk not anecdotally, but factually about benefits or pros and cons. And then finally, in terms of the legal landscape, the banking has to change in order for this to be a viable industry. And the safe banking laws are in Congress right now, but with the turmoil of the election, who knows how that's going to sort out. But I think 2 years from now, we're going to be looking at a much different place.
I'm a wholehearted believer in your business and what you're doing. And I've seen firsthand the positive effects that it can have in particularly the medical community. And I've also seen a friend of a friend who was trying to start a business, cannabis business, and tied back to the banking stuff, so many challenges to just get a bank to do it. And I guess the risk to the bank is that it's not federally legal, right? And they don't want to take that risk.
There's one bank in Maryland that banks all of the industry. And I don't know how they found a path with the Federal Reserve that allows them to operate, but they have. But for us, it means we get no interest on any of our money. We can't write checks. We can't have credit cards. Really what it is a closed loop banking system where we can transfer money to each other to pay our bills, but it allows us to operate in Maryland. And I hope that there becomes financial ability in the United States, because it is still a challenge. It is still a real challenge.
Can you elaborate a little bit? I want to make sure I heard you correctly earlier when you're talking about greenhouse wellness, kind of a holistic approach that you're bringing to wellness, right? With cannabis being one part of it at the dispensary. Can you elaborate a little bit as to why you chose that type of model and why it matters?
Well, you know, as the mother of two children, I was so anti-cannabis growing up, and I still advocate parents and encourage parents. The developing mind is nowhere to start with cannabis unless there's a physical illness. But as we get older and things start to break, holistic wellness to me is very important. You got to eat right. You got to stay fit. And cannabis could be an addition to your health regimen, because we all have an endocannabinoid system, and sometimes it's overdeveloped or underdeveloped. We just don't know. But we chose to be in a medical facility, which is the Crossroads facility, that has a whole list of practitioners, and they treat whole body health. There's acupuncture, PT, holistic medicine, and apothecary. And we're just one element of wellness.
And going, switching from greenhouse back to you a little bit earlier in your career, what would you say if you were looking back, was there a moment or a theme of something that if you could tell your younger self something or give a piece of advice or the pieces of advice that you give to your children, what are some of those?
Well, it was interesting to me. I came from West Virginia, never having driven on a 6-lane highway, you know, never interacted the way other people may think is common here. And so going as a woman, I was the first female engineer at ARIC ever. And that was in 1982. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. And so we have to find our voice and our confidence. And I think the girls and young ladies that I hire now are such different people. They're like resolute and they have vision and they have confidence. And I didn't. So I think you have to stand within yourself. I always tell everybody that works for me, integrity is absolutely non-negotiable. That just is how it is. And some people expect to be handed things. And, you know, you got to work hard. It's that extra 5 minutes that you put in that's going to really make the difference. And so I don't think the premises are much different than a long time ago. I do see a certain amount of fragility in the youngsters now. They're very fragile. They don't deal with conflict well. They're little snowflakes. Oh my God, they hurt my tender feelings. At some point, we've got to learn to be a little more Teflon and just not let everything hurt our tender feelings, but move on and recognize that people have many opinions and we don't have to agree with them to accept them.
Was there anyone in your career that you remember had a profound, or not even profound, just influence on you?
Steve Walker. Didn't take but a minute. He founded Trusted Information Systems in Glenwood and grew it from a crypto company into a publicly traded company that we then sold to McAfee. Steve was one of the kindest, nicest, most principled individuals I have ever met in my lifetime. He was the good guy. I was the bad guy most of the time. But I learned from him that kindness doesn't mean weakness. And that you can be resolute and firm, but still be kind. And I hope those are lessons I never forget and can share with the women who follow.
Would you say that is your, how would you describe your leadership style?
I think it's, I hope it is kind and compassionate. I kind of tend to mother my team. That's just my style. We have seminars here on how to start your own business, how to incorporate, how to write a balance sheet, because I hope I'm growing a crop of entrepreneurs, not just one. I don't just want employees. I want people who are going to go out and build. And that's what we encourage. And if they want to start their business, I'll help them. We want people to succeed for the long haul, not just today.
And what advice do you have for, because you touched on it earlier, the folks that maybe come into the workforce, a couple of things that are either, I'll ask this in a couple different ways, so you're either having trouble finding a job or that, I'm paraphrasing what you said, I don't want to put your words in your mouth, but that are a little soft, right? And just need to kind of toughen up and get some more grit. What kind of advice do you have for them if they literally don't have those skills?
It's funny. I go back to something called the grit survey and you can find it on the web. It's 7 questions and it's fascinating. It really shows you where you stand in the grit scale. And I think that is the key element to success for anybody. You don't have to be smarter. You don't have to be anything. You just need to work a little harder. And so what we try to teach people that come here are coping skills and ways to respond. We had a customer incident yesterday where the customer was very unkind to someone on the staff. And so I hope that I can be an example of going back and saying, you were unkind, that's unacceptable. You have a right to shop wherever you want. It may not be here, but you can't talk to my team like that, period. And I just think that we have to be able to voice our displeasure or our consternation at situations in a positive, kind way with boundaries. And that's what we've not learned. Instead, people go on Twitter and make a rant because you can hide behind that keyboard. We need to have person-to-person interaction and be able to say to people, that's not acceptable. I understand, but my boundary's here.
Right. I think it's always equally important, my opinion at least, is to understand the value of the real dialogue is not just getting your point across, but understanding the other side and maybe right. learn something too, right? And I think that full piece we've somehow, in work, in life, in the country, not to go too far down that path, but have kind of lost that both and ends of the conversation.
The COVID days have been enlightening. We see such anxiety and such fear, and people react to that with anger and sharpness, and it's disheartening. We see more people suffering from severe anxiety. And I have to say, I don't think COVID's going to change for a couple of years. We have to learn to live within the new confines. I don't like them any better than anyone else. But kindness is a choice. Choosing to live within your boundaries is a choice. To be respectful is a choice. And it's one that I hope more people make.
I love that. I love what you just said. It's giving me like minor goosebumps. Kindness is a choice. I believe that wholeheartedly. How has, talking about COVID a little bit, how has COVID affected your business?
You know, my partner, Dr. Apgar, feels very strongly about safety. And so when COVID hit, we did all the research that we could do. We put the cough guards up in our facility, and then we went curbside because we really felt for the safeness of our patients, many of which are immunosuppressed or somehow have a decreased immune system with cancer, and our staff, that we felt that was the safest way. And so we now can service three times the customers that we serviced before. They order online. We go to the curb. If you want a personal consultation, we do it via Zoom. Our goal is to keep everybody safe. And we see varying ranges of customer expectations. Some people want their product in the back, in the trunk. Some people will take the bag. But we sanitize every hour. We glove everyone's mask. And we really try to keep everyone safe in these crazy times.
Has there been anything as a result of the pandemic that will forever be changed in your business or the way that you operate your business?
This has really given us the ability to sit back and optimize. And as an industrial engineer, it's a process problem, right? I now service three times the amount of customers with the same staff in the same time frame. And it's an efficiency gain. We go out, we walkie-talkie, every transaction is done within 1 to 3 minutes. We want to be the Chick-fil-A of cannabis. And so we are able to service 300% of the people that we were before. So I'm going to take that as my good takeaway from COVID. What we don't see are people's smiles. What we don't see are the people that we want to wrap our arms around and say, it's going to be okay. We had a gentleman come by yesterday, a PTSD vet from one of the wars, and he sat in his car and cried. And I'm reaching through the window to hug him because that's what he needed at that moment in time. And PTSD and anxiety are rampant right now.
Do you see in your industry, I'm imagining, and you touched on it a little bit earlier, that a significant portion of your customers, are repeat customers. And so the relationship, you start to develop some level of relationship right. with them, I'd imagine.
You know, we also do a lot of training. If you are new to cancer and you want to medicate, but don't want to be impaired, psychoactive impairment, we'll teach you how to make suppositories. We'll teach you how to do that. You can't really do that on Zoom. You have to have them in a conference room and manipulate and show. It saddens me because I think that a lot of the connections now are via Zoom. They're not via an arm around the shoulder or a rub on the arm. And I think people are desperate for that touch. And it's just hard right now. Even like with your own children, I'm not going to mask to hug my children. It's just a different place that we're in.
What advice do you have, or based on your personal experience, what advice do you have, or advice that you would have given yourself, just tied to the entrepreneurial side of things, and as a theme, the challenges, the things that are amazing about it, the stuff that people, the underbelly that people might not always talk about either starting a business, surviving to some point of viability, and then running it from there for growth?
You know, when you get in the shower in the morning, you need to say, I can, and step out and try it. because my advocation is you run with scissors and you learn. Even if you fail, you learn. And so I don't think that we should view failing in a business as failing in life. And people tend to be binary. My advice is jump in. We started TheraPearl with $5,000. We wrote our own website, wrote our own search engine, and it grew out of the basement. And it is just fortitude. It's one foot in front of the other. There's no magic roadmap. It is just a matter of writing one more sales letter. I'm making one more call. And it's that extra 5% that's going to differentiate you from anybody. And as women, we must cheer for each other. We must pat each other on the back. You don't have to tear anyone down. There's room for all of us. And we need to give each other a hand up. If you want to be a mother, I'm cheering for you. If you want to send your children back to school, I advocate. If you don't, I advocate. Every choice is different for all of us. And we just need to be patient and kind to each other.
What have you observed in your career tied to that, tied to women supporting women? Have you noticed that? What have you observed?
I think it's better. I think that the women of this millennia, the 30-year-olds and up, are better at sharing, are better at advocating, are better at giving a woman a hand up. When I went to school, there were 300 men and 3 women in engineering, and they would always say, look to the left, look to the right, only one of you is getting through. And so it was more of a competition to get by. We don't have to do that now. There's room for all of us. There is room for everyone at the table. And we need to advocate for each other.
Do you remember, I've asked this question to other folks who have engineering backgrounds. Do you remember in school that feeling of looking and being like, okay, I'm one of three in this group, and was that noticeable to you? Was it just like, and so what? I'm just going to do my thing. Like, what was your mental state about that?
I guess I was clueless, to be honest. I was working full-time, going to school full-time. I didn't have really the luxury of looking around and judging. It was just, I was single focused. I was getting this engineering degree. That's what I was going to do. And so I think, truthfully, I think social media and the rhetoric surrounding that and the nastiness that people put out, it is terrible for other women, for other entrepreneurs, for people who are starting out, because they kind of see that vitriol. There is a benefit for cluelessness, I think, just putting your head down, putting the blinders on, and keeping going.
Mm-hmm. How is, I'm bouncing around here a lot, but I'm trying to use our time efficiently. Because
I'm Italian. It's all good.
I love it. I'm loving this. Talk about building a business. How much, and I don't know if this is like your, in Greenhouse Wellness and in your previous business, what might be your role versus your business partners, but talk about the strategy piece. Like when you're planning for growth of your business, how far out are you planning? What types of things are you looking at a strategic level versus a tactical?
Like, you know, it's funny, the venture fund taught me many things, but one of the things it reinforces is the sports analogy. You don't skate to where the puck is, you skate to where the puck's going to be. And so you must look at the future from your point of view and then bank on the fact that's where you're going to be. And really the key to success is resilience, the ability to move and adjust if that future that you saw isn't quite the future that is. And really the one thing I want to say to budding entrepreneurs is no cash equals debt. And people go into these businesses, they have unrealistic expectations. Let me just tell you, costs twice as much, takes twice as long, always. And if you plan for that, you won't run out of cash and you won't run out of patience. So people come in with unrealistic expectation that they're going to throw the doors open and money is going to cascade from the sky. And it isn't like that. We all scrape. We all fight to pay our bills. There'll be some month you're going, I'm not taking a paycheck because I got to pay my team. That's part of it. It isn't all glamour and sunshine and roses. It's getting up at 4:30 in the morning and writing that extra email. And that's what people forget. And you look back and that's part of the joy. Mm-hmm. That's part of what you remember. That's part of what you put your arms around. And that's part of the glory of having your own business is looking back and knowing, yeah, I solved those problems. But truthfully, I think the credit belongs to those who are fighting every day. They're not genius. They're not brilliant. They are determined and stubborn. They have grit. That's what gets you through. Mm-hmm. And so every day I wake up, First thing I do at 6:30 in the morning is check our bank account, make sure I can pay my bills, write out all the bills. Then I know what I have to do that day. And I want everybody on our team to have the vision that we have, so I don't have to make decisions. These folks on our team are the smartest, brightest people, and they do things I can't imagine. And so I surround myself with people smarter than me, and I'm just the beneficiary.
I love that. I remember when I started the business, it was like my work time went up and my money went down. But it was a random going back to the grit thing, it forever changed me in the way that my additional confidence level of knowing, okay, I don't need all those other things, you know, right. I don't need the manicures or the pedicure, like whatever you, however people choose to spend their money, right? And it gives an additional sense of, I feel like, empowerment and confidence.
Well, I always say I play a game against me every day. Mm-hmm. I don't play against anyone else. I get up every morning and I say, how many people do I have employed? Are they happy? Are they moving forward? Do we have money in the bank? Did I sell more than I sold yesterday? Did I meet more people than I did yesterday? And that's a game I play with me. And I think if we look at our businesses and try to just play that game and win against ourselves, not against each other, I'll help anyone that's out there because it doesn't hurt me. It just helps. Mm-hmm. And so we live in our own little world. It's different than all the other dispensaries, but it seems to work for us.
I love that because I believe it to my core that if you, me, every other single individual in the world, our circumstances and everything are different. No one person is alike. DNA, how you were raised, whatever you want to say. And so to compete against other people in a way is almost, it's a losing, self-defeating versus make your own rules, make your own game, and then you can constantly change them to have fun a little bit, right? And right. I feel like it's a different way of looking at it that keeps you energized and motivated.
And it's funny, people who don't like to sell, I would say to them, make those 20 calls a day. And by the end of a week, you'll have made 100 calls. Mm-hmm. And out of those 100 calls, 3 of the balls will drop to the bottom. It is a matter of numbers, expectation, and expected value. And that's how you have to look at a sales job. That's mm-hmm. what we all do in our world. We sell every day. We sell ourselves. We sell our products. We sell our business, our children. It's just, you've got to work hard. You can't sit back and expect the field of dreams to build it and they will come. I want that, but I haven't experienced that yet.
How do you define, this is my last question, and we're going to get to some rapid fire. How do you define success?
I define success as surrounding myself with talented people and making them succeed. Because if they're successful, by default, I'm successful.
And is there anything else, before we jump to rapid fire, is there anything else topics-wise or anything that you want to talk about?
For all the other women out there who are thinking of doing it, this is a love letter to you, a vote of confidence. You can do it. You will fail. You will not always succeed, but every day you get up and put one foot in front of the other and keep going.
I love it. I love it. How can people, if they want to get in touch with you or learn about your business, what's the best way to do that?
You can reach us at greenhousewellness.com or blasiva.com or highheels.biz. And we are always open to seeing folks and helping anyone that we can.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to go to jump to rapid fire. These are random questions unrelated to anything that we've talked about. I got 6 or 7 of them here. Netflix or cable?
Netflix.
Stone or brick?
Oh, that's a hard one. Brick.
East Coast or West Coast?
East Coast.
Cat or dog?
Cat.
Sun or moon?
Sun.
Astronaut or deep sea diver?
Oh, astronaut.
All right. And the last one, coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Coffee. All right. I'm a coffee girl too. I'm with you. This is the Lauren Asghari podcast. And again, my guest today was Gina Dubé. Thank you so much for being here. She is a managing director and founder of Greenhouse Wellness in Ellicott City. I'll link up in the bio how you can get in touch with her in addition to what she already said. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank
this was
you.
Fantastic.
Fabulous.
I really enjoyed talking with you.
I did too. I hope we can meet in person. Stop
Absolutely.
By.
Absolutely. And we'll see everybody next time on this podcast, How'd Her Career Get There?
Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd Her Career Get There?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.